Case number 15-5186. Bank of New York Mellon as successor in interest to J.P. Morgan Chase Bank National Association, as successor in interest to Bank One National Association, as trustee for A Securities Corp. Home Equity Loan Trust Series 2003-HS1 Asset-Backed Pass-Through Certificates, formerly known as Bank of New York Trust Company N.A., formerly known as J.P. Morgan Chase Bank versus Perry M. Henderson, formerly known as Perry M. Bryant Appellant, United States of America. Mr. Enzina for the amicus curiae, Mr. Reza for the appellee.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court.
Good morning.
I'm Paul Enzina, appointed as amicus to present argument in support of the appellant's position. This is a foreclosure action. The appellant, Mr. Henderson, is the borrower, and there is no dispute that Mr. Henderson defaulted on the loan. The district court granted summary judgment. However, the district court granted summary judgment on the ground that the defendant, Mr. Henderson, lacked standing. And standing is in a posit here. The standing doctrine enforces Article III's cases and controversies limitation on the courts. In order to preclude the courts from providing advisory opinions, the standing doctrine requires that the party invoking the court's authority have an injury that can be redressed by the court's ruling. As the district court noted, this is the basis for some of the courts that have held that a borrower lacks standing to challenge the assignment of a mortgage note, because his rights and obligations, that is, the rights and obligations of the borrower, would not be changed by a ruling of the district court, and that opinion would be purely advisory. Here, the Article III judicial power was invoked by the Bank of New York and not by the appellant.
I'm just curious. I could look this up, but did the bank invoke standing in the district court? Did the bank invoke standing? I just don't remember.
No, the bank did not raise standing. Okay. Raise the appellant's standing as
the
an issue.
The district court raised it on
yes.
On some, okay, great, thanks.
There are state cases that do talk in terms of standing. Right?
I'm sorry?
There are comparable state cases that talk in terms of standing.
I think that's correct, Your Honor, but I think those are cases in which the borrower is challenging the assignment,
right,
affirmatively, where the borrower is seeking to invoke the court's power. Here, it's not the borrower that's seeking to invoke the court's power. And the bank has alleged everything it needs to allege to show standing. It has alleged that it was injured by the appellant's default, and it has alleged that...
Well, the bank's standing wasn't questioned by the...
Correct,
court.
Correct. So... In effect, the district court sort of got it backwards here. The issue was not whether Mr. Henderson was entitled to attack the assignment. The question for decision here was whether the bank was entitled to enforce the note.
So if we agree, if we think you're right, that from our point of view, that's the end of the thing. We just send it back, right?
Yes, correct.
Okay. All right.
District court held that the borrower's default is sufficient and that the borrower cannot attack the assignment. Accepting that rule would mean that anyone could raise the borrower's default, even a stranger to the note. But unless the person raising that claim of default is the actual holder of the note, any opinion by the court would be an advisory opinion.
Well, what do we know here about the bank's holding of the note and the deed of trust?
Your Honor, I'm sorry. I'm having a great deal of difficulty hearing you.
I'm not sure we fully know whether the bank has both the note, it's the assignee of both the note and the deed of trust.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. The white noise is still on. I don't think
your mic's working.
Yeah, it's working.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, because I can hardly hear you.
Well, it's the blower.
Oh.
I'm afraid I'm getting old, Your Honor.
Join the club.
Okay. There's a document that traces the note, I guess it is, and through the assignments.
Yes. Right.
But I couldn't find anything with regard to the deed of trust. Do they travel together, or what happened to that?
Your Honor, to be perfectly honest, I'm not sure I know the answer to that question. The issue here, though, is that when the bank moved for summary judgment, the bank was required to show two things. One, that the borrower had defaulted, and two, that the bank was entitled to relief on that basis. And there was no dispute that the borrower defaulted. But in order to show its entitlement to relief, The bank simply relied on its allegations in the complaint. It simply alleged that it was the holder of the note in due course. And I want to read something that's in the bank's brief. Bank says the burden was on Henderson to provide a question of fact sufficient to defeat summary judgment, and the district court correctly found that he had not met that burden. That's on page 12 of the bank's brief. Now that, in a nutshell, is exactly what should have happened here, but that is not what happened here. The court did not put the burden on Henderson to prove that the bank did not possess the note. What the court did was the court said the defendant lacks standing to challenge that and did not consider the appellant's evidence in that regard. Now, it may well be that the bank could have survived a motion for summary judgment by putting forward facts, for example, an affidavit that said that the note was assigned and attaching perhaps the document showing the assignment. They cite part of the note in their brief. And if that had been presented to the court on summary judgment, that would have shifted the burden to the borrower to allege specific facts, raising a genuine issue of material fact. But that is not at all what the district court did here. I'd like to move on and address the court's ruling on the motion to dismiss. Specifically, the motion to dismiss Mr. Henderson's counterclaim for injunctive and declaratory relief, alleging that the bank failed to provide the notice required by the National Housing Act. The district court found that the bank had met that obligation. This was improper on a motion to dismiss. A motion to dismiss does not permit the court to make a factual determination. The court is required to accept the claimant's allegations of fact as true and determine whether the claim is legally sufficient. Now, the bank argues that the court could consider the document that it did. What the court said was that the bank met that obligation by virtue of a letter that was attached to the bank's complaint. And the bank argues that, well, a court is entitled on a motion to dismiss to consider documents attached to the complaint. And that is true, but what that means is that the court is entitled to consider documents attached to the claim at issue. The document at issue here was not a document attached to the claim at issue. It was attached to the bank's claim and not to the appellant's counterclaim. The point is that the court is required to take the non-movement's factual allegations as true.
Why can't we on appeal convert that to summary judgment?
Well, that's not what the district court did. The district court...
We can do it on appeal.
Well, one of the difficulties with that is that the...
There's nothing to suggest he was going to come forth with anything to overcome it, and there is case law in the circuit that says we can convert it on appeal.
Well, that is something that we don't know. Like whether or not the borrower could have or would have come forward with something to dispute that. We don't know that at this point.
Well, there's absolutely nothing to suggest he could have come forth with anything, right?
That is correct as far as I know, but...
Yeah, I mean, if you're contending it's an inappropriate motion to dismiss and there's some things that you have to say, normally you indicate what they are. So the only thing that's there is adverse to his position. Adverse to his position.
That is correct. And in fact, the district court could have converted this to a summary judgment.
Right, and we can as well.
But when the district court does that, the district court is required to give...
No, but that's not my point. I know the district court didn't. We can as well.
I think you're not taking yes for an answer.
Yeah. we can.
Well, then I guess I will take that and reserve my time for...
Well, what's the argument against us doing that?
Against you doing it?
Yeah.
The argument is simply that the borrower has not had the opportunity that he should have had under Rule 12.
To show what?
Well, under Rule 56.
To show what? That's the point. I mean, if you said, but wait, here's what he might show, and indeed we tried to say that, and we said it in our briefs, and there's nothing to indicate that he has anything to show.
Well, suppose, for example, the plaintiff or the borrower in this case came forward with an affidavit saying that I did not receive that letter.
So where's the affidavit?
Well, he didn't put in an affidavit because
this was a Rule 12
motion.
You could have put it in there. You could have put it in on appeal. My whole point is, at least as I'm remembering the cases, you're not suggesting there's anything more to be found other than what the district court looked at that was attached to the bank's complaint. I understand that. They're not normally supposed to do it, but if there's nothing else there, we can convert that to a summary judgment.
But the difficulty here is that the borrower has never had the opportunity to address this as a motion for summary judgment.
Well, you know, the bank other way did. To look at this, it isn't clear what I don't want to characterize it, but there are lots of assertions citing, you know, all kinds of statutes and regulations, but nothing to suggest that there's anything to it.
Well, and
the notice was given.
But the difficulty is that in this case, by considering the bank's evidence, the district court gave the bank the benefit of what Rule 56 would give them on a summary judgment. But the appellate, Mr. Henderson, did not have that same opportunity.
So you're saying the district court should have avoided the problem by saying, I'm converting this to summary judgment.
Yes.
You've got to add anything. And
right, provided notice.
And you just don't want to deal with my assertion that we can do that too. But well, in any event, I hear you. Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right.
May it please the court, good morning. My name is Mohsin Reza, and I will be presenting argument in support of the appellee this morning. The district court correctly ruled on both the motion for summary judgment and the motion to dismiss. In support of the motion for summary judgment, the Bank of New York.
Are you defending the district court's standing decision?
Yes, Your Honor. I believe the district court.
You are?
You are?
What's what is it?
Yeah. Where is that coming from?
Could you repeat? I'm sorry.
I said, are you defending the district court's standing, this determination that he lacks standing, Article III standing?
Well,
and if so, what is the possible basis for defending that?
Well, Your Honor, I think there's two different types of standing that are at issue in this case. There's the constitutional Article III standing. There's another type of standing, the prudential standing.
No. We're talking about Article III standing. The district court ruled on Article III standing. He didn't have standing in this case. He's a debtor asserting defenses against a purported credit. Why? I can't imagine why he doesn't have standing.
Well, Your Honor,
what is it?
So, with regard to standing, we're talking about specific documents, not the fact that Mr. Henderson could not bring these claims or bring these defenses. The standing issue involved whether or not he, as a borrower, as a non-party to the assignment of the deed of trust, the Exhibit D to the complaint, whether or not Mr. Henderson had the right, the standing, quote unquote, however you want to use that phrase, whether it's constitutional or prudential standing, to challenge that document. We believe, and the district court agreed, that Mr. Henderson did not have the standing to challenge an assignment, essentially a contract to which he was not a party. That's where we believe the district court focused its standing argument. I think there's a little confusion about whether or not it's a constitutional Article III standing argument that was being made, or whether it's a standing argument characterized as a prudential type of standing argument, whether you can assert the rights of somebody else in a case. This is not a situation where any of the parties to the assignment actually contested that the assignment did not occur, or that any of the parties to the assignment contested that there was something otherwise improper with the assignment. In fact, the assignment was with MERS, which is not a party that was brought in by the defendant even in his counterclaim. So it was it's a different type of standing argument, Your Honor, than I think is what has been explained or characterized on appeal. I think the district court correctly got the issue of standing. Mr. Henderson did not have the standing or the authority to challenge that document. He wasn't a party, he wasn't an intended beneficiary, and therefore he could not ask the court to eradicate, to invalidate that document. Moreover, Your Honor, even if he did have standing to challenge that assignment, that wouldn't prevent the court from finding that the Bank of New York had the authority to proceed with foreclosure. District of Columbia law doesn't require a recorded assignment to be a recorded assignment to go forward with the foreclosure. What we pled, or what Bank of New York Mellon pled, and what the court recognized, that there were a couple of things that occurred here. The borrower took out a loan. The borrower defaulted on the loan. We know that's not contested. What he contests is whether or not Bank of New York had shown that it has the right, the power, the authority under the loan documents to ask the court to allow it to go forward with foreclosure. We believe that the record showed that. We attached, actually, I should say,
the district court made no findings on that, correct?
Well, Your Honor, I think it did say that they could move forward with the foreclosure. It found that the borrower was in default, and there's no dispute about that. It also found that the Bank of New York's assertion that it was the holder and could enforce the note and the deed of trust was also correct. Again, this complaint was filed in Superior Court, and it was verified under oath. And that allegation was reinforced, that sworn allegation was reinforced in the motion for summary judgment. Bank of New York said, we're the holder, we're the beneficiary of the deed of trust. Therefore, under District of Columbia law, when the borrower is default, we have the authority to ask the court, in this case, to do a judicial foreclosure, allow us to go forward with the judicial foreclosure.
What, in your view, did the district court fail to decide on the merits by virtue of its ruling on standing?
What did it?
Fail to decide by virtue of saying there's no standing, whatever kind of standing the district court was enforcing. What did the district court then fail to decide?
I don't think it failed to decide anything, Your Honor. I think Your Honors have correctly pointed out that there's nothing in the record that suggests that that the Bank of New York Mellon had no standing or no authority to ask the court to foreclose. What it presented was, again, the note, which had a special endorsement to the trust.
Wait, I'm not understanding. If you feel so strongly about the standing point, if you prevailed on that, then there would be some things that would not be properly before the court, right?
Well, there's
what I'm trying to understand is there is this standing cloud in this case.
Correct.
The district court said there was no standing. What did the district court then declined to do because it found there was no stand, that Henderson had no standing?
Right. So we, Your Honor, the Bank of New York filed its claim, and the court concluded that we had the standing, the authority to move forward on our claim. We also defended Mr. Henderson's counterclaim, which was essentially the counterargument, saying that Bank of New York Mellon did not have the authority to move forward with foreclosure. Part of his argument was that there was an assignment in the land records between MERS and the Bank of New York, which was not proper or otherwise effective. Setting aside whether or not that's an argument, yet there's any merit to that argument, the district court found that he didn't have standing to challenge that assignment because he was not a party. That assignment did not change his rights.
The district court declined to decide any issues on the counterclaims.
What happened, Your Honor,
is that what you're saying? District court did not have to decide and indeed did not decide. Is that what you're saying?
No, I think it did decide on the counterclaims.
That's what I'm confused about.
So it did decide. We filed a motion to dismiss earlier in the case. It was not ruled on. By the time that the dispositive motions came up, we reaffirmed our motion to dismiss and then filed a summary judgment on those as well, adding additional arguments. So what the court found was that Mr. Henderson did not allege sufficiently in response to the motion to dismiss the counterclaims any facts that were cognizable under the law.
Because of lack of standing?
Not necessarily, Your Honor.
If there's no standing, why does that matter? Why wouldn't the district court's disposition on standing end it?
Well, Your Honor, there's different claims. Again, there's on appeal, they're focusing on the declaratory judgment and injunctive relief claim. Part of our issue, unfortunately, Your Honor, is that there's two appellant briefs. There's one by the amicus and by Mr. Henderson. Mr. Henderson says he's got a right to bring all of the claims. Now, those claims included FDCPA claims. They included quiet title claims, FCRA claims. The appeal that was filed here focuses on the declaratory judgment injunctive relief claim. Now, that's the flip side of our argument, right, saying that the Bank of New York Mellon had the authority, the standing to bring its claims. Now, Bank of New York Mellon was a holder of the note and is a party that was allowed to enforce the note by virtue of being the holder. Goes to your question, Your Honor. The security follows the note. There's multiple ways that a party can hold a note. It can be a holder by virtue of having bearer paper, a blank endorsement, or it can be a holder by virtue of having special endorsement, which is the case here. So
special endorsement meaning what?
meaning that the note was endorsed specifically to an entity or a person. That's what we have here.
Something I wanted to ask you about. There are two versions of the loan to the note here. One is at page 46 of the joint appendix. And it says, pay to the order of, without recourse, Bank of New York. It's not Bank of New York Mellon, that's earlier, I guess. At page 202 of the other appendix here, Henderson's appendix, there is the same document, pay to the order of, without recourse, nothing. Right. So how do these two relate?
How do these two what?
Relate to each other. Why are they different?
So originally, it looks like the note was endorsed in blank. It happens all the time in mortgage practice. The note is endorsed in blank. It's easier that way to transfer the note. You don't have to have special endorsements and allonges.
You just have to have physical possession?
We have physical possession, correct, Your Honor.
You do have now?
We've had it.
Okay.
Yes.
All right, so this is blank, and so it's essentially bearer paper at that point?
At that point, it's bearer paper, correct. The complaint, of course, includes the note, the same note, which was specially endorsed.
Right.
And that's endorsed to the trust, the 2003 HS1 trust. So we believe that there's no fault in the court's opinion about standing. The standing issue really relates to whether or not Mr. Henderson had the authority to challenge the assignment of the deed of trust, and we believe that the court got that correct under District of Columbia law. Furthermore, Your Honor, with regard to any of the counterclaims, I should say that they weren't pled with any sort of specificity. They don't. The National Bank Act claim it's not pled. In any way that suggests that there could be a private right of action that could be brought either directly or under the guise of a declaratory judgment claim. Moreover, Mr. Henderson didn't challenge really the substance of the arguments on the motion to dismiss. All he again reasserted was the same consistent argument, which was that the Bank of New York didn't have the authority to foreclose, which the court found, based on the record, that it did.
There's another document in the appendix, I'm sorry I can't say where right now, that shows a series of endorsements, or reflects a series, from I think starting with MERS and ending with you. Is that correct? Now, here it is, 69 in the joint appendix.
What would be the title of that document?
That is Assignment of Deed of Trust, District of Columbia.
That's correct.
Okay. So earlier we were looking at two versions of the note. First is bearer paper and then after an endorsement. And now we've got the deed of trust starting out with MERS as a nominee for South Star Funding, which is the original lender, is that right?
That's correct.
And ending with Bank of New York Mellon, a successor to J.P. Morgan, a successor to Bank One, and then the securitization. So do these documents travel together or not? How does this work?
Your Honor, the security in the deed of trust follows the note. So if the note holder has the instrument, bearer paper, or specially endorsed, the security of that deed of trust follows. There's a difference between the note and the deed of trust in terms of assignment. The note, on its face, shows that there was a special endorsement, that the note was transferred to the trust. That document is filed as a document showing the assignment of MERS, which is the nominee and the beneficiary under the deed of trust, its interest to the Bank of New York Mellon. That's what that document is. There are arguments that are often made that notes become split from the deed of trust. Those arguments have been rejected time and again by courts across the country. A lot of them focus on MERS's role in the mortgage market. MERS is not a party in this case, first of all, Your Honor, and MERS's role has been upheld. It can serve as a nominee in deeds of trust, and it can do, under the language of the deed of trust and under the custom of foreclosure practice throughout the country, assign its interest in the deed of trust, and that's what it did here.
Okay, now then, where is the parallel assignment of the note? to Bank of New York.
That's on the face of the note, Your Honor. That's the endorsement to the trust.
Right.
The 2003
Bank One. This is to Bank One.
Well, Your Honor, it's to the trust. The bank
as trustee, right?
You can tell from the long.
Okay, for the 2003 HSI.
That's correct, Your Honor.
I think I understand this, but
sure.
Once I don't have you in front of me, I may not.
It can be complicated by virtue of the fact that there's a especially long name for this plaintiff in this case, but essentially there's a special endorsement to the trust. The court relied on that special endorsement. There are facts alleged under oath in the complaint saying that we're Bank of New York for the trust is the holder of the note, and thereby under District of Columbia law, it's allowed to enforce the deed of trust. And that's what it did when it walked into court and filed a judicial foreclosure action. The court granted count one on summary judgment. There's nothing in the record, Your Honor, as Your Honor has asked what was in the record to contest that. There is nothing.
This case, you said, was filed in Superior Court.
That's correct.
Which sounds like a very sensible place for it to be resolved. And it was transferred because the IRS was involved?
The IRS was a lien holder. It took its initiative and removed the case to federal court.
And when it dropped out of the case, correct?
Well, it didn't really take any action other than participate in what it was supposed to participate in, the conferences,
Is it a party as of now?
I'm sorry?
Is it a party now?
It will continue to be, Your Honor. Again, the foreclosure hasn't happened in this case. The court has just blessed the foreclosure to go forward. It's not, there's been no foreclosure yet. So
how does that tell me whether the IRS is a party? That's all I want to know.
Well, it remains a party, but whether or not it takes any further involvement in the case, I can't determine.
Is it a party to the appeal?
It's not a party. It's not, so far as I can tell, it's not taken any position in the appeal. Nor has it contested the right of Bank of New York to foreclose.
I guess if it has a lien, it'd like to see a foreclosure so it can get paid out, right?
Well, it has a right, Your Honor, to enforce its lien anytime a foreclosure action is initiated. Correct.
Is it superior to you?
There's what I would call a kind of a complicated process by which the...
I'm sorry I asked.
I apologize, Your Honor.
Anything else?
No.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Did Mr. Nzinna have any time left? You can take 2 minutes, if you'd like.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Before you start, I want to stay on the mundane so this is clear for me. What do you think the district court failed to do by virtue of its standing ruling?
That's exactly where I was going to go.
Okay.
The claim raised by the bank here required the bank to show two things. They had to show default by the borrower and ownership of the note. The bank moved for summary judgment to short-circuit the trial process, saying there's no real issue of dispute on those two factors. So on summary judgment, the district court was required to decide, is there a genuine issue of material fact with regard to default? And he found there wasn't, with regard to ownership.
And with regard to what? What did you
ownership of the note.
Right, okay.
And the district court recognized that there was a dispute between the parties with regard to the ownership of the note.
Mm-hmm.
What the court failed to decide was whether that dispute required a trial.
Required what?
Required a trial.
Oh.
Or whether on a summary judgment, the party moving is required to come forward with facts showing its entitlement to judgment. And then the non-movement, is permitted and required to come forward with specific articulable facts showing that there is genuinely a dispute. And that's the process that the district court should
take. What is it that you think Henderson merely asserts, I think there's a problem. The bank put evidence in. Now, on summary judgment, normally Henderson would lose. What more on the ownership issue? That's what I'm perplexed about. What more is it that you – merely to say we disagree doesn't mean you get a trial.
Understood.
You've got to support your position.
Yes.
The bank supported its position.
Well, no, the bank did not.
So you think they have nothing in the record on ownership?
If you look at their motion for summary judgment, what the bank said was, we own the note.
But the counsel said it's a sworn statement. It's attested.
cite the complaint.
Right. Correct?
That is true.
Okay. Doesn't that make a difference?
That does make a difference.
Yeah, right.
I don't know what Mr. Henderson would have come up with.
Yeah, but on non-judicial foreclosure, the note suffices to prove the point. And I assume that's certainly true on judicial foreclosure. So what more is there to be said?
The point, Your Honor.
That's right. You agree to that, right? On non-judicial, the note is sufficient.
I believe that's correct, Your Honor.
Okay, so there's nothing that Henderson is presenting to suggest in judicial foreclosure the rule is different. And I can't imagine why it would be. So the bank has its proof there, and Henderson has nothing. On summary judgment, Henderson loses. That's the way the law normally works.
If the district court had considered this as a motion for summary judgment, as opposed to short-circuiting that by finding no standing.
Okay, well, now it's here, and we could do that. Any reason why we could not do that?
I am unaware of any specific articulable facts that Mr. Henderson has put forward challenging the bank's evidence of its ownership of the note.
That's what I wanted to hear.
Anything else?
No, sir.
Okay. Mr. Nzeni, you were appointed by the council, by the court, to serve as amicus, and we are grateful to for your assistance.
Of course, Your Honor.